Why did you choose to go into education?
I actually chose to go into education as a result of a teacher in high school who saw something in me. Her name is Melanie Caldwell. She's since passed. But she was an advocate and someone who stood up for me and demonstrated just a love, a care, and concern for my well-being as a sophomore in high school in a way that no other educator had to that point. And she felt that there was something about me that would have made me, that education would have been a good process or career path for me. You know, I had aspirations to play collegiate sports, and I was fortunate enough to get a choir scholarship to the University of Delaware. And because Ms. Caldwell kind of planted that seed that education would be a good path, knowing that there was a void of black male educators even at that time, and which is something that's still present day, I chose education as a career path or an option at that point, and realized that it was part of my destiny, I guess, to get an education.
So you mentioned you went to UD. You were a star football player there. The university was known, you know, at least a while back as not being the most welcoming to black students. So do you mind if I ask, what was your experience like there?
Yeah, I mean, I know the, you know, population of minorities and black students, you know, definitely was underrepresented. And, you know, I think it's something that the university continues to try to strive to, you know, promote diversity, get more black students on the campus. You know, I think my experience was one that was unique in that I moved through a lot of spaces being an athlete. But I was also always conscious of, you know, my blackness and found myself to be one of few within my, you know, areas of study and concentration in elementary teaching education. You know, primarily, you know, my classmates were predominantly white female. And so, you know, that was always kind of a conscious way that you had to kind of move and go about the campus. And, you know, I think it's something that routinely plays out as we see in society today. You know, what does it mean to be black in America, primarily a black male? And knowing that you move in spaces, and even to this day, being one of probably the only African-American black superintendent in Delaware at this time, that I find myself being the only one represented in the room often.
Mm-hmm. I do want to get your take on sort of this moment. Does it feel different? Does it feel like it could be a tipping point? One specific thing that happened recently, DOE is giving the Office of Innovation and Improvement, which you used to direct, a change, calling it the Office of Equity and Innovation. And, you know, certainly before these protests over the last month or so, there was sort of an increased focus on equity in education in Delaware. We have the education funding lawsuit going on. Do you feel like we're making progress in Delaware? And do you think this movement right now could be, you know, the push we need to make more progress on equity in education?
I mean, I think so. I think obviously, you know, serving and working and living in Red Clay, the fact that we have a Office of Equity, and I've since been in this role expanded it to the Office of Equity and Strategic Partnerships, because it goes just beyond what a school or educational system can do. It takes a collective impact framework and effort as we look at our nonprofit partners, our philanthropic community, for-profit, you know, organizations and businesses, and then, you know, our families and representative communities as a whole, to kind of come together to share in a space of empathy. And I think, you know, while it's folks have been, you know, emotions have been pricked by the, I think the kind of blatant visual of the unfortunate 8 minutes and 46 seconds that we all continue to relive. I mean, it's right here, right? And our young people who are energized and motivated, and, you know, another avenue that we have kind of expressed advocacy amongst Red Clay is really elevating student voice. And what better time now than to actually lean into it and engage our young people in a way as they continue to advocate and seek for a better today, and not simply waiting for, you know, tomorrow. And so any progress and the obviously the level of conversation and discourse, while it may not necessarily be comfortable, it's something that we have to go through. And I think this feels different, but I can't speak to, you know, a generation ago because I didn't live it. And I'm sure, you know, those who, you know, fought for and against injustice and for justice, you know, as they lived history and as we reflect on history, you know, maybe they did feel the same, and maybe they see this as progress, and maybe they don't. I think, you know, I tend to live by a quote that my experiences shape my biases, which leads to my actions. And so as we experience this, we're going to have to be conscious that obviously there are multiple perspectives. So how do we listen to those perspectives and kind of create a path so that we do see substantive change and not just rhetoric? And it's just not a statement that we're putting out to say that we believe, but how do we actually turn this into action so that our students, so that our families, and our community as a whole transition beyond, I think, the hurt that many are within our community is feeling, or the confusion through a lack of understanding, or, you know, unconscious or conscious biases that play out on a regular basis, that we can be intentional about, you know, developing a community, especially for our children, as an educational system can be as equitable as we aspire for it to be, and monitor that over time to really look at what are our goals as a community, as a district, so that, again, it's just not words or tolerance, you know, but we're actually doing this work for a deeper understanding, ensuring that, you know, again, we want to create a system where all children and all families in Red Clay can thrive.
So what are your, I don't want to necessarily make you pick like top priorities, but like in terms of concrete policies and practices that the state needs to be putting in place for educational equity, you know, what do you want to see next?
Well, I think back to just my days as a fourth grade teacher and would always teach Delaware history. And I was always fascinated in teaching it to our children, the lack of knowledge that people have even about Delaware history, but let alone our history as a nation. And so just from an initial, you know, kind of policy standpoint, it would be, and as an educational institution and system, you know, really teaching, you know, not just Black history, but true American history. And some of that is painful, you know, especially as we, you know, remove monuments and understanding what many of those monuments and you know, statues and things, what they signify and what they represent. But it's also a means of educating, you know, all of us, you know, as a society on, you know, just the inherent system and structures that our country and our systems are built on, so that we can, as best we can, come from a equal understanding as to why there is a need for change. And so, you know, I think the divisive nature of where we find ourselves, it's easy to become tribal, you know, based on, you know, zip codes and socioeconomic status, where we live, to pit people against each other. And I think that's the biggest challenge for us in education is, you know, especially in Red Clay, so many of our families come from so many differing, you know, perspectives and viewpoints and life experiences. And then we have children who come into our schools where we have to try to engineer community, knowing that, you know, when that school day ends, they go back to a world that could be polar opposites, right? And it's, unless there's a shared experience, whether that would be through, you know, the arts, athletics, classroom-based instruction, you know, how much interaction beyond the school experience does our community generally have? And so I think really having a just some understanding of what our history is, you know, for us, we're looking at, you know, social justice standards and you know, throughout K-12. And, you know, that's just for all of our, you know, representative groups, whether that's your LGBTQ. And as I indicated, we have a lot of students and families who are English learners who are dealing with issues around immigration. And so we have to be attuned, you know, looking at the disproportionate impact around COVID. There are so many things that I think impact schools or actually happen out in communities that come into schools. You know, so how do we support our educators who get into this business to really make a difference and change the lives of students to be culturally responsive in their teaching, you know, around text and information, you know, understanding, you know, how are we trauma invested so that we understand the needs of children who might come to school with underlying trauma, adverse childhood experiences. You know, so there it's layered. And then obviously when we're talking about, you know, injustice and the various other things that we're confronted with in schools, how do we create a system that can, one, absorb the pressure to help the world change, but do that in a way where we keep people safe, healthy, and whole in that process of doing it, knowing that it's difficult work. You know, for us as a district, you know, we've leaned into this work, not just because of what's happening in the moment. I mean, you know, we have diversity champions, as you indicated, the Office of Equity. We've, you know, partnered with groups such as the ACLU this past year to really look at disproportionality in school discipline. You know, we are keen, you know, we have Dr. Sarah Celestin, who is the Director of Special Services, who oversees our special ed services. You know, really being attuned to, you know, the various, you know, subgroups and demographics that make up Red Clay, and really trying to be intentional about how do we meet the needs of each of those representative groups, but also being inclusive in our approach, understanding that we are, you know, a community. And when we say the Red Clay Consolidated School District, how do we not leave anyone out on the outside, not feeling welcomed, wanted, appreciated, loved, and getting back, I think, from my goal is the true essence of what schools and should represent, which is ultimately learning is that relationship between the student and the teacher. And anything that kind of creates or puts a wedge in between that becomes a distraction to us trying to build a healthy community. And so how can we continue to, you know, be attuned to the needs, but proactively put resources and supports in place so that we can create and live out those vision and mission statements that we have. This is difficult work. It's uncomfortable work, but it's necessary work nonetheless if we really truly believe that every child can learn, should learn, and more importantly, we're here to teach them and help them learn.
Red Clay Superintendent Darrell Green, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.